Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucking ears, what the fucksters? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is WTF. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How's it going? Just back from Spokane, Washington. I had a great time. I will tell you about that great time. I will tell you about a lot of things. Today on the show, I got Paul Dano. I'm going to do a little talk with my buddy Adam Goldberg, because I always like talking to him. I like having my friends over for little talks occasionally. But I have an announcement this week. Maron, the show on IFC, it's the season finale. It's going to be a doubleheader, the last two episodes. Very excited for you to see it. But I also want to tell you that it's the series finale. I've decided that this is it. It's done. I mean, look, there's ways to do more, but this was the vision. This season was the season. And I couldn't be more thrilled about how it came out, how all four seasons came out. I think you'll see that we wrapped the story up in the best way possible, and I just feel like it's done. And I'm thrilled about it. I imagine maybe IFC would want to do more. I don't know. They have not said anything to that end. They haven't said one thing one way or the other, but that's just the way that TV works. But I don't want to do any more. I'm sure they'd be thrilled to do more because we do it at such a low, like it doesn't cost them a lot. We do it pretty inexpensively, which adds to the challenge, but I had amazing people working with me on the team of Maron. I had great writers, great line producers, great directors, lighting guys, set guy. Everybody was great. IFC gave us a lot of creative freedom. But it's just, I feel like it's done. And I'm proud of it. And I don't see any reason to keep going. I don't have to. I guess a lot of people think like, well, okay, why not keep going if you can? Why? Why take a good thing and make it garbage just because you can? You'll see. I think you'll all be satisfied at the end of this season with the series. I just was so excited about this season because we did something that we could probably only do at IFC in a situation where the risk was limited in a way, in that there was no reason for us to keep doing what we did the first three seasons. It became a world. It became a format. It became something that was an extension of my life that could have easily been refillable to some degree. But what's the point of refilling if the stakes are so low? In the sense that you see the garbage on TV that's the same jokes, the same set, the same stories retread over and over again for years and years and years. They do that because they make money. And they cost a lot of money. And they're on big networks. So they just keep doing it because everyone's making a fucking fortune. So why not just sell out years of your life doing the same fucking thing over and over again if you're making bank? I'm not like that, number one. I'm not a big money guy. But also, there was just no reason to become redundant. So this season, we departed into a sort of fantastic, disturbing. It was like a cautionary tale, yet a fantasy. You'll see where it ends up. And we took a chance. I came up with the idea to do the arc like we did it. So you had to watch everything in order, and the season had an arc, and I was going different somewhere and changing as a person, I think. And where we ended is where I want it to end. And that, I hope you're okay with it. I'm sorry if you're disappointed, but I feel like it's done. And I'm just glad that I am able to say I'm done. And I can, and it can be my decision. I'm very happy not to be desperate and beholden to that desperation. This way I can be proud. And it's not unprecedented. It's like British shows. A lot of them have the right idea. You do 3-4 seasons and it's done. And I'm proud of it. IFC was very, very supportive creatively. They had the money they had. Fine. We did what we did with that. This last season, incredibly ambitious. Amazing what we got done. We did a show that was unlike any show. And it definitely honored my voice, and it honored the skills of everybody involved. And I'm proud of it. And I hope you enjoy the finale. All right? Okay. All right. Starting today, you can get tickets to the Now Hear This Podcast Festival, which is taking place in Anaheim this October. It's like Comic-Con for podcasts. A whole weekend of live performances and podcast tapings and special podcast events. And speaking of special events, I'm doing one. Me and my producer and WTF co-creator, Brendan McDonald, are going to do a live behind-the-scenes event. We'll talk about some of our favorite moments from this show. We'll share some secrets of the show and take questions from the audience. Plus, there will be live shows including Comedy Bang Bang, How Did This Get Made, The Brilliant Idiots, and with special guest Lauren Lapkus. Tickets go on sale today, July 11th, starting at 8 a.m. Pacific. Go to nowhearthisfest.com for special early bird pricing that ends July 22nd. There are also a select few VIP packages, so get on that now. It's October 28th through 30th in Anaheim, so go get tickets, and I'll see you there, okay? Me and Brendan, we'll see you there. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be in Salt Lake City this weekend at Wise Guys. I'm excited about that. I've been there a few times, but I tell you, I got through a wall, broke through a wall, you know, going up to Spokane. I had no idea what to expect, my friends. And, from what I garnered, is that the word, from other people, I was anticipating meth zombies walking down the street, babbling to themselves in some sort of frenetic, twitchy pace, some of them on fire, perhaps. I was expecting rundown buildings. I was expecting tattered window dressing awnings, but no, I get to Spokane and right away flying in, I'm like, holy shit, this is beautiful. Not only that, it was a very warm and nice place to be. I don't know. It just had a vibe, man. Like something was about to happen. I don't know what it was. The comedy club's new. Spokane Comedy Club is a great venue. Surprisingly great, only because it's this big room with these high ceilings and beautiful real brick walls. But, you know, with high ceilings, you usually lose a little sound. But no, it doesn't. I don't know if they padded them or what, but it was a great venue. Mike Coletta featured for me, and he did a great job. The owners of the club were great. I can't say enough great things about Spokane. I'm seriously, pardon me, when I go to places like that, I'm like, I got to move here. You can still get a house for a couple hundred grand up there. And it's pretty. And I did all kinds of fun things. I ate some shitty, amazing food at Dick's Hamburgers. Where the slogan is, I think, a bag full of burgers. I think the slogan should just be, fuck it, eat here. Because it was just one of those places that's been around forever. And it was, just, you know, the sort of like fresh fries and whatever. I'm not going to just sing the praises of Dick's. There was a community of seagulls that seemed to be there as well for years. You could tell by the shit that they don't clean up out in front of Dick's that this was generations of seagulls that actually... that lived at Dick's, that they ate there. They've been having little bits and pieces of French fry and hamburger for generations. Some smart granddaddy goal said, fuck Seattle, I don't need water, I'm moving inland to Spokane, and set up his family there at Dick's in Spokane. I enjoyed that. I also went to a place called White's Boots. I'd never heard of it. And some dude emailed me like last week saying, you know, you're a boot guy, you got to go to White's. And I'm like, what is White's? And you go to this place and, you know, you can't even, they have all these, they've been making work boots forever, but they have all these beautiful boots, but they fit you and then they make them for you right there in the shop, American made right there in the shop. You can't walk out with any boots and they have all these beautiful old styles. You got to check this shit out, man. White's Boots in Spokane. Didn't even know they existed. And I'm a fucking boot guy. And I'm looking around the place and I'm like, all right, do you got this in a 12? The guy's like, no. I'm like, how about this one? No, we don't have any boots right here. Not many. We got to fit you and make them for you. And you know, initially I was a little upset because I wanted to have the excitement of an impulse buy where I could walk out with a $400 or $500 boots and then wonder if they fit properly for a month. But now I got to wait to do that. I don't know. Maybe it was just that I was away and staying in a hotel room and it was nice and clean and quiet. And I, after Thursday's show, worrying about my new hour, a lot of stuff came together up there. I did a lot of fucking freeform comedy, had a lot of fans, and I just, thank you. Thank you, Spokane. That's all I got to say. And I don't want to, you know, let the cat out of the bag, but if you're looking to get out of wherever the fuck you are, I'm thinking Spokane, all right? Especially maybe if you're like some sort of small industry, that'd be nice for the town. Perhaps a reasonably decent tech company or perhaps a manufacturer of things might want to move to Spokane to help that local economy there because it's a fucking great town. I'm telling you, man. Come on, man. Just keep making it. The world needs content. I've had it with that word content, by the way. If you're a creative person and you're referring to your work as content, why don't you just call it garbage? Content is something the other side of the aisle, the executives, the studios, the platforms. That's a word they've made up to diminish what we do. If you're a creator and you call your stuff content, then you're not really that much of a creator, are you? If you're calling it content. Look, I made some content. It's demeaning. It's disgusting. Guess what? We got a special guest. Special guest today, Adam Goldberg, who actually is on the show frequently because I like Adam Goldberg and we have a fun time together. And I do that. You know, I don't know if some of you seem to think that we're changing the show. We're not. If I like somebody and they got something going on and they've been on the show before, they're my friend, I'll come in and let them come in, talk about, you know, 20 minutes or whatever, about whatever, to have a fun chat. And then we have the main chat today. Paul Dano is here to talk about Swiss Army Man. But right now, why don't we listen to me and Adam Goldberg Jew it up a bit. Adam is in a new Netflix original movie called Rebirth, which you can stream on Netflix starting this Friday, July 15th. So this is me and Adam, and Adam's worked up a bit as usual.
You know, I have years and years worth of photography and you know,
pieces of film,
and I have, you know, and I always have this sort of music backlog, which is
why it time for an Adam Goldberg retrospective?
Well, I thought about my first record when I made that a few years ago, calling it the best of, because it was just a culmination of shit I had done in six.
I see photographs, yeah. Listening stations, yeah. And then like video monitors, which is clips of the movies that you've been in.
Well, like I don't. Yeah, well, this sounds more like my wake.
I'm planning it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds nice. No, that I have wanted for years to do an exhibition, which was not video clips of me acting. For the love of hell, God.
No, you just, but, that'd be like the joke area.
Yeah, right, at the joke area. Like, or this paid for this. And yeah. then this clip, you know, yeah. from the Anna Nicole Smith movie paid for this record, which you have underneath, which you can buy for.
That's pretty funny.
It is actually kind of funny.
You put them on, you can put them on separate racks with the video, right. With the film clip that paid for it.
Yeah, kind of like it. I think, and it's funny because before we went on air, as it were, we were talking about...
What the fuck are you going to do?
With my life, right? So I guess maybe...
But how often do you go through that, though? Let's be honest.
No. This is,
this is new, a new level of what the fuck am I going to do?
No, it's a real one. I think it's, I mean, look, everybody's, it's real for everybody. It's extra real now that, like, my baby isn't some sort of amorphous
blob. Why don't you and Jason Schwartzman start a business?
The Coconut Sisters. Coconut Sisters. Yeah.
Yeah, the Coconut Sisters.
Yeah.
And you guys can do your movies, and then you
It's amazing how I get that tweet, though, a lot. You know, what? It's like, oh, I just discovered that they were two different people. But really...
You and Jason Schwartzman?
Yeah, we don't look... It's just literally if there were two black people.
You're literally, personality-wise, the opposite people.
Yeah, I don't know him. I've never... I think I met him when he was a kid.
He's a fairly sweet, calm man.
And I'm a fairly mean, agitated man, is what the implication
I don't think
is.
You're mean.
Right. Just more...
Self-involved, maybe.
He's calmer, probably more... I think he probably has everything in the world going for him, doesn't he?
So do you.
No, but yeah, I mean...
You have a lovely wife and child.
Yes, of course.
You were in a big movie.
That's amazing. You were in a big movie. I always think it's funny when people on Twitter, when I like tweet about Trump or whatever and somebody trolls and then they call me a has-been in order to get to me. And I'm like, but it's not relevant because I never was. I'm doing a better now. If you want to just speak economically, doing better now than I ever was.
You've done a lot of great work. This new movie, Rebirth, this fun movie.
Right. So this movie.
No, we don't have to. It wasn't a segue. I don't give a shit.
That's the only movie recently where I have. That's the only acting work I've done recently where I'm actually acting.
Outside of my show, which you did. We did some very serious acting. I was watching Rebirth, and I think that on my show, it was a more challenging part, really.
Yeah, maybe. You might be right.
It's
hard to act with you. So,
what do you mean?
In that regard.
Because I'm so fucking good?
No. Are you kidding? That was supposed to be the seed of this major motion picture we were going to write, which
I thought you might have made it with this Rebirth guy.
No, this is a fucking thriller. It's a thriller. Rebirth is a thriller. And I didn't make it. I didn't direct it.
I didn't write it. So it turns into a
You watched the opening credits. I saw you as I walked in the door.
No, I watched when you came in.
Yeah.
And you sat down. And I'm like, oh, something's fucked up. Something's going to happen. Yeah, this is an old friend. Yeah. He's like, hey, where you been?
I'm
like,
a bad influence.
Bad influence guy.
It's actually a good role.
No, sure.
I auditioned for this role.
You did?
Yeah. I haven't gotten a part I've auditioned for in many years.
Everything's looking up and you're all depressed.
No, nothing's looking up. Listen.
See, I think that you're not looking at your life in the right perspective. I think you have a lot of things. You've accomplished a lot of things. You have a lot of nice leather goods. Yeah, and you have an aesthetic. Mm-hmm. You're a very compulsive and talented photographer. Mm-hmm. You play music. Mm-hmm. You have a lovely wife who's also employed and creative. Mm-hmm. Your son, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, right?
But I think it's just a matter of bringing it all together.
Well, it is a matter of bringing it all
together. Maybe you, Jason Schwartzman, and Crispin Glover.
Oh, dear Lord.
You guys just do a group show.
Right. Shoot the cookie, it's called. I'm going to, hold on a second. Is that you have a cough thing or like a burp button?
We'll just cut it out.
Okay, so.
Don't cut that out.
So.
Well, now this is a different camera.
Yeah, this one is hard to find.
Yeah.
This is a Graflex Norita,
uh-huh.
a medium format camera from the
70s. A lot of people looking for it?
It's hard to find.
But
okay. I don't know if a lot of people are looking for it. Yeah, they get snatched up pretty quick on eBay.
What's good about it?
This is one of the fastest medium format lenses you can find. It's an 80mm 2.0, mm-hmm. and that's considered quite fast for a medium format lens. Like the fastest 35mm lens would be a 0.95 Noctilux for a Leica or for a Canon. But
listen to you talk. So acting's just sort of like something you have to do. Now. I got to do the acting to make some money.
Yeah, I bought two of these recently because they're so precious and they don't work very well that I wanted to make sure that I had a backup. But the lens is key. Incredibly shallow depth of field.
Uh huh.
So right now, let's see. I'm gonna have some microphone and also I can do some double exposures with this.
You like the double exposures?
Well, you know that about me.
I do.
I mean, that's no secret.
No, everyone knows that.
I mean, that's
everyone on Twitter.
That's out.
Yeah, yeah, everyone on Twitter who's up at 3 a.m. going, why is Adam taking pictures?
Yeah, exactly. No, my 7,497.
Are you sleeping better?
Actually, you know what's interesting is because you're like a morning person.
I get up. I think I just got some curtains that are going to stop that though.
Wait,
well, it took me years to realize it might be the sun coming into my room at 6.
Wait a minute.
What?
So I thought you got up because you were actually, that was like sort of one aspect of your personality.
It seems to be, but it might be the sun. I'm going to find out soon.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I shot my last shot on you.
Where do you go for film? The past to process it?
Well, they're labs. I have processed my
they
own.
They all know you though,
yeah.
Right?
Oh,
you
yeah.
got to be the guy. Like,
oh yeah.
Here comes Adam. Thank God.
That's a lot of guys shoot film. It's much more than you would think.
Okay. I'm not judging.
It's all right. No. But
I'm
I mean,
just being provocative.
I wish I was the guy. I wish it was like they were staying open for me. But no, there's like a lot of I'm sure it's probably art photographers.
Have you ever taken your wares to get some gallery representation?
I haven't actively done it. I got a commercial.
Why, are you afraid?
I got a commercial agent at one point, like a commercial rep for photography at one point.
We're talking art.
No. I realized, and then that was part of the issue is they kept wanting to send me out to do like FX. In fact, the irony is I was on Fargo, and they were like, "We got a meeting with you for FX
to shoot promos.
To shoot promos for Fargo." I'm like, "But I'm on that show," and I had the meet. I took the fucking meeting just because I didn't know what I was doing with my life still. So I thought, I guess I could shoot the press pack that I'm in.
Yeah. And did they let you?
No. And so we
How long have you not known what you're doing with your life?
This is recent. I knew that the problem was is I knew what I wanted to do with my life when I was very, very young.
Yeah.
And then what you realize is that you don't always get to do what you want with your life.
So like 20 years? You've been not knowing what to do with your life?
I thought I was on track to doing what I wanted to do.
Right.
And then suddenly I woke up.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was something happened between 30 and 45. I don't know what took place.
There are some good times though.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where, it's a complete, it's a total black hole.
Right.
You know, I see that there has been work that was, I mean, two movies were made and
yeah.
things, somebody did something on my behalf.
But you had a good time.
And
you bought cars and a house and pants and you got married.
True. You know what? I did buy pants. It's important to be married and have a child.
No,
the problem is what that does is then it presents you with and again I hesitate to use the word a real problem. Everyone has real problems.
Right.
But let me put it to you this way. Given my current circumstances and my feelings about sort of acting and whatever in general, right? If I could, I would probably get rid of the house.
Yeah.
Keep the gear.
Yeah.
Go find an apartment.
Keep the kid and the wife.
No. I'm saying if there was no wife or child.
Oh, okay. Right.
I would downsize to the point where, I mean, maybe I would.
Maybe open up a private investigation business.
I always did want to be, you joke, that was one of the things I looked into when I dropped out of college.
Yeah.
One of the first things I did was
PI?
Look in the phone book to see if I could apprentice.
Yeah.
A private investigator.
Well, it sounds like you got the gear and you're going to have a studio apartment.
I got some old film gear.
Yeah.
I can give you the results of your wife is cheating on you last month.
Because I got the two broken watches.
Right.
Like
yeah.
I put the watch under his tire.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And here's I finally got the film developed.
Yeah.
Turns out they, unfortunately, in the interim, she probably left town already with the guy. But it looks like they were cheating six months ago.
And look, here's a double exposure.
Yeah, right, right. So it's like, though they're not in the same room at the same time. I shot him over here and her over there. But this is a rendering of what it might look like.
It's pretty cool though, right?
You dig it?
Yeah, I shot this on a Narita. Yeah, you're familiar with very right. medium depth of field.
Right, very shallow depth of field. So I thought you might appreciate that, sir. oh my god,
that's the movie. The guy who's a private eye, but he's doing it the old way.
Yeah,
new world.
He's a whole total fucking holdout.
Yeah.
When are we gonna do our movie? No, but seriously, because we're not going to. We
I don't
done
know
it.
What do you mean? I'm about to stop everything after November.
What's doing going with your show?
I don't think it's going anymore.
Really?
Well, I mean, how many do I got? I think it's done. You know, I don't want to be one of those people that's sort of like, oh, let's do another one because we can. Like, this season's very heavy and it ends in a very sweet place and it was conceived to be.
My parents-in-law really like it.
Do they?
No, they really do. I have it all on the DVR,
yeah.
the whole season.
This season, I think, like, my acting was better. It's like it's a whole different show.
Yeah, no, I know, yeah.
I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I like the where it's at. Like, the British, they do, like, four seasons,
right.
three seasons. How many needed to do?
I don't know. I've never been in a situation where I've been on anything that's lasted longer than, like, 6 months. I have no idea what you would do. I mean, and I certainly haven't had my own show, so I don't.
I've just been looking at recent movies that are, you know, our attempts at doing the movies that we like.
What are they? I would like to know.
Like The Good Guys.
Oh, right. Which I didn't see. Was it good?
It was okay. I mean, I thought their dynamic was good.
But they're literally setting it in the 70s.
No, I know, but you could watch
it's inspired by that.
But Freebie and the Beans, probably a funnier, better movie on some level. Like, there's an effort to
it. No, that's what I'm saying is that when you take something and you're inspired by it and then you do a sort of a literal interpretation of it or put it actually in the 70s, we need to make a movie that evokes that feeling
without ripping it off,
setting it in the set. Could please use this portion of the, don't cut this out.
What, with the guy gardener. Blowing?
Yeah, because I think it says something that I was scheduled during the.
We ended up having a conversation, averting a meltdown in the house.
Yeah.
You being insecure about your stereo equipment in front of mine. And then, we talked smoothies for a little while.
We both drink the same smoothie.
Kinda.
I do coconut milk or almond milk. I don't always do almond milk.
I freeze the bananas. I freeze the blueberries.
Roxanne will freeze them. When she doesn't freeze them, I don't get around to doing it.
Right. So
that's very, very diligent of you to do that. Because sometimes I'll do it.
It's fun because it's like a milkshake. I was also in Vegas for the day yesterday, and I ate a steak. I've been off the red meat lately because I've been having, what I didn't tell you was that for four months in
New York, I told you this in text.
You couldn't see us because you were, ill.
No, you were ill, but we kept getting sick.
Right.
I was sick practically the entire time of one thing or the other, but I've been having some recurring perennial and prostatitis pain.
Uh-huh. So inside your ass hurts.
Prosthetic, yeah.
Your balls ache.
More perennial.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah, that's bad.
Kind of shooting up to my.
But that, you know what, dude? It's like, that'll go away.
I don't know that. I got a CT scan with contrast while I was there. They did actually find a small hernia, a small inguinal hernia.
Were you happy? I knew it.
They said with a bladder ear.
What does that mean?
Exactly. I said that to my gastroenterologist the other day. He's like, I don't even know what a bladder ear is, but I guess I fucking have one. Give it to me. Leave it to me to have a bladder ear.
Yeah.
My bladder has an ear.
Well, come on, Adam.
What?
Snap out of it. You look good. You're healthy.
No, I'm trying to tell you I'm not.
No, but I think you are.
I mean,
you know what happens to most things when you feel them? They go away.
I know, you're right. That's true. That's what Roxanne says. What are all those notes? Not for this interview.
No, those are handwritten letters that people write me.
Oh, that's nice. Should we read one?
No, I'll
read one on the air.
No, I'll read them later.
I'd like to read one.
No, let's stay focused.
They look really like people, because you should see the letters I get. Enclosed is, please, I enjoy your show, The Goldbergs. Can you get it? Because that's not my show.
I know, I get it.
Who am I sharing the show with?
I don't know.
I think it's important.
I'll find out for you.
How about like a best of the Keith Richards?
I'm not going to put you on a shitty show.
No, but I want to be, how about a little Keith Richards?
I don't do best of the Keith Richards.
That was good. I told you that was good, right?
I think so.
You a text. That was.
Yeah, that's up there remarkable. Under those two pieces of paper pinned up there. The one on the left is my Keith Richards notes, and the one on the right is my Neil Young notes.
Oh, shit. I haven't listened to the Neil Young one
yet. It was fun. It was hard. Yeah. Did she like it?
I don't know if she heard it. She just said, holy shit, Neil Young's on. We gotta listen.
So you had a tolerable time on the Gaffigan show.
Yeah, I had a tolerable time on the show, but I had a
bad time in New York, except for Bridget St. John, who you worked with.
I was very productive photographically, but I saw...
But you didn't feel well.
Do you know how many doctors I saw? I can't... For real, do you know
New York doctors, that must have been fun for you.
It's kind of fun, but their places are kind of shitty.
It's not like the old days.
It is exactly like the old days. They've stopped in time, those offices. I mean, there were implements in those offices that looked like they were used on that show with... what's his name?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
I don't know.
The doctor Marcus show Welby? That takes place in the Victorian era.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Well, I mean, how much do you have to update certain things? What do you need?
I don't know. You know what? In the end, it's all getting shoved up your ass. So right. It doesn't really matter as long as I sterilize it.
Have you really asked about, gone deep in yourself about why the ass problems?
It's gone really deep in myself. I mean, I've had more, honestly, I was saying that prostatitis is better than Grindr.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly had more people's fists up my ass in the last 4 months. I mean, have I thought about why I've had pain there? Yeah, it's interesting.
Keep going to get things put in your ass?
Well, also it's a Freudian, it's interesting. It's a Freudian thing. Also, it's my urethra is in pain as well.
Your urethra?
My urethra.
Is in pain? Like when you pee?
The whole area is just jacked.
All right.
And Rebirth, Netflix, July 15th.
Right, yeah. Right.
I'm genuinely proud of that movie.
Yeah, no.
Like, I really need to make a point of saying that. I worked. I actually worked. I worked hard.
Yeah,
that
no.
That doesn't mean it's good. That doesn't mean I'm good. Working hard, people stink.
I've acted with you. You're the real deal.
I appreciate that.
And I'm glad you enjoyed this role. So you're proud of it.
I am proud of it.
Okay, good. And some people should watch it. It's a thriller. You're the bad influence in the other guys.
Kind of antagonist.
In a you know, sort of a dead end life in the office.
It's a dead end life. Yeah, it has a sort of
it's sort of like the Sean Penn movie, The Game.
It's Fincher-esque in that regard. Yes.
Right. Well, good. Well, that's good. But I'm still concerned about other things.
No, I mean not much has been resolved.
Do you have other acting work coming up?
Not really.
No. What happened to that thing you did with Bruce Willis that I was up for?
I don't know. I did 3 movies last summer. One of them is another one I'm proud of. Is this movie, it was called The Force. Now it's called Between Us, which played at Tribeca with also the Netflix movie. And I don't know what's going on with that. And that movie's got Ben Feldman, Olivia Thirlby, they're fucking great in this movie.
What the hell? It's so hard with movies.
Oh, no, it's really hard. This movie...
Just to get a movie, no, like, the movie, out in the world.
The movie is a beautiful movie, and I became pals with the director, Rafa, and his lovely wife and their kid, and it's like, they made a lovely, like a genuinely beautiful little relationship movie.
Why don't we do a series, and I never fucking pitch this, since like this is going to be cut down, mm-hmm. you know, to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I take umbrage.
Don't take umbrage. I just to tighten it up a little. No,
listen, this is.
I think
where I'm sharing the show with Kenny G. I know.
Can I get Kenny G?
Have you tried?
No.
Have you tried Trump?
I'm not going to do him. Why would I let him talk at me for an hour?
Yeah, I know. That's you're right.
Well, you're not going to have a conversation with the guy. So all right,
but it'd be funny just to have him in. Just this neighborhood would be funny. Just it would be funny.
Look, God forbid he's president, I'll talk to him.
Okay.
So, well, no, what I'm saying is maybe we should get some of this on video. You know, me and you having conversations about life.
You know that thing that we did, right? That meerkat. Right,
the meerkat, the pre-periscope.
That's a very...
We're the only people on meerkat.
Yeah, I know. But that, I'm telling you... we get requests for that. You've seen those come in.
I know. Is it available?
Well, because so in that era of Meerkat.
The Meerkat's nothing.
Okay. Well, I don't know nothing. What it is.
It's Periscope.
Right. But before Periscope, there was Meerkat.
For a
and
week.
It was the third for day it was out. And you and I had like a 3-hour long conversation. And it did save to my phone, but it saved all out of sync. All the sound is out of sync. So if somebody wants to volunteer to take 3 hours of fucking iPhone footage and sync it up.
And we move around, too.
We go all over. We start in Veselka.
Yeah.
We go up Bowery or something.
Right.
We go down Bowery.
Yeah, and then we end up at the Bowery
Hotel. And then we meet these people in the lobby.
Horrible.
You were really having a hard time with. And then we go up to your room for like another hour.
Yeah.
For like a post, you know, game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sort of hungover recap for me.
Yeah.
You were cool.
Yeah.
Clean.
Mm-hmm.
Clean as a whistle. Anyway, we shot in Veselka recently on the Gavigan show. I was a bit nostalgic for our... What do you mean? I would do that. Particularly if things could actually be worked out.
In what way?
Your guy's going to have to gain that down a little bit. He's going to have to compress the shit out of that.
What, you just yelled?
Yeah.
I've been watching the levels. All right, so we'll work on that. People can go watch Rebirth.
I think it's Rebirth.
It's Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
The Gaffigan show's on.
Sundays at 10 p.m. Yeah. On TV Land.
Yeah. You'll be, if anyone wants to provide Adam with a nice new house.
Right.
There might be some jeans and a couple guitars in trade.
Right.
Or for that.
Sync some sound on some iPhone video or or stick some pliers up my ass.
Yes. But but newer pliers.
Yeah.
He has a problem with the older pliers.
Yeah, I don't like the old stuff.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
So that movie, the thriller that he's talking about, Rebirth, you can stream it on Netflix starting Friday, July 15th. Folks, what? I've always found Paul Dano's acting very interesting. He's an exciting actor. He's odd. He's unique. He's got a lot of sort of strange emotional range. I've liked him in Little Miss Sunshine. I liked him in There Will Be Blood. I liked him in the new movie. I liked Swiss Army Man. Actually, I liked it a lot. It's... It's odd. It's in theaters now. And I was excited to see what Paul Dano was like. So this is me and Paul Dano. You just got here?
I did. Well, I was in Korea a few days ago. I flew home to New York for a day and a half. And
Korea?
I'm here in sunny L.A.
Sunny L.A., where you spend time. You've been here a lot lately, I imagine, over the years.
I have, yeah. You know, I like it here a lot more. When I first came here when I was 18 to L.A., it was like an allergic reaction. I was very overwhelmed by just being sort of around what I do. But I think because I was unformed and impressionable, and so I had to just stay in New York and around where I grew up.
Sure, where you're protected by regular people.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But now I dig it more and more. So
where'd you go? Why were you in Korea? What the hell was going on over there?
I was doing some acting.
In Korea?
Yeah, with a guy named Bong Joon-ho, who's a filmmaker I really like. He made a film called Memories of Murder and a film called The Host that I think are just wonderful, and a film called Snowpiercer. That's probably the one that people know the most. But he's the real deal.
How'd you find him? You just started watching his movies? Someone, did he ask for you? Did you reach out to him and say, dude, let me make a movie with you?
You know, we actually met a long time ago when he was at BAM in Brooklyn for a screening, and I was a fan, but we just kept in touch via email. And then when he'd come to New York, we'd hang out, get drunk. He's super funny, like a little perverted, like sense of humor, you know, and I was like, okay, I like this guy, you know. And so we became friends, and now we're working together.
Are you the only English-speaking actor?
No, Jake Gyllenhaal and Tilda Swinton and myself are sort of the...
Yeah, that's some big acting.
Yeah, they're all right. Yeah.
It's a big acting force. That must have been just like, were you just sitting there? Do you realize that? Do you have scenes with both of them?
I have scenes with Tilda, not so much with Jake, but I've worked with Jake before.
Right. In
Prisoners.
I watched that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a scary movie. And, you know, you were in a tough space.
Yeah, that was tough. I have to say, that was one of those that paid off when it was done. You know, I felt good about it when it was done. Wow. And I think it's a good film. And I think the people who I got to work with are wonderful. But I can't say that sitting in a hotel room in Atlanta reading about abuse and PTSD.
Right.
You know, that's,
yeah, I can't remember. I think Hugh Jackman?
Yeah.
And Jake was like the cop, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you were the suspect, but it turned out to be a little more elaborate. It was almost like one of those true detective stories.
Yeah.
We can spoil it now. It's been out over a year.
No, it's been out. And that's why it was kind of a cool character in some ways. You know, he was actually a victim, even though you think he's, a bad guy.
Yeah, well, it's interesting what we project onto people. Just because you look a certain way. Like, you know, that guy wanted to believe you were the guy because you were freakish.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And really, he was just somebody who...
Angry.
You know, he's in a state of, you know, trauma. Yeah. And so I would, when you read that, I don't hold that character's flaws against him. You know, actually, that's a pretty empathic place to come from, like, so, you know, even though he seems evil at the outset, you know, actually, like, I think it's somebody you could feel for, like, man, that guy got, you know, it's not his fault.
Yeah, he's human.
Yeah.
Well, that was sort of that happened with the character in LIE as well, right?
Mm.
I mean, I didn't see that movie, and I apologize. I've seen a lot more of your movies. I've seen a lot of your movies.
Yeah.
I saw the new movie. We can talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
But LIE was your big break, correct, basically?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was probably 16, but look 12.
Yeah.
Well,
you look 16 now. How old are you now?
Yeah. I just turned 32 last week.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You're holding up pretty well.
32. Fuck.
Oh, come on.
No, it's great. It's great.
How do you think you're going to age, really? I feel like it's all going to kick in maybe at 42. You're just going to get old in a day.
I'm waiting for if the metabolism changes because
you're lanky.
I eat well.
Yeah.
Even though I'm scrawny.
Right. You know, you're one of those enviable people.
Yeah, I know.
Who can just eat whatever you want
and
not put on a pound.
People don't like hearing that.
But when you took... Well, let's go all the way back.
Yeah.
But before I don't want to leave anything trailing off here. Where was I? Oh, yeah. Tilda Swinton. So you're doing scenes with Tilda Swinton. who's just an acting monster. She's a she's like she's amazing.
Yeah.
When you act, and I've done a bit of acting, I don't have any training, but I can pretend pretty good.
Yeah.
When you know that Tilda Swinton is there, are you just acting like a person, or are you like, can you feel her acting? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's a good question. I've been really, really lucky to work with a lot of wonderful people.
Yeah.
That's something that excites me and gets me off and sort of inspires me. And I hope somehow I'll become a better actor myself by, you know, the same way, like, you play ping pong against somebody who's better than you, you're going to get better.
Or you quit ping pong.
Yeah. I don't think I think about that much. Actually, I usually feel that when it's done. Like last year, I did a film called Youth, and Michael Caine, Harvey Keitel, and Jane Fonda are in it.
I like that movie a lot.
Yeah, it's cool. But like when I was doing press stuff for it, was the time where I went, holy shit, I'm sitting next to Jane Fonda, and I love Jane Fonda.
Sure.
But when we're doing it, I don't think I let that come in too much because... feel like one, you're focused on your thing, and two, I don't think you want to let that be.
Worry about that. Yeah. But also, you've been doing it a long time, where you realize like this is our job. There's Jane Fonda; she's here to do the job of acting with me.
Yeah.
Feel like that. I mean, I felt that way. In the little experience I had doing my show, that these people come who you're familiar with your whole life.
Yeah,
and you're a fan and you're in awe, but it's sort of like we're all actors.
Yeah, I
we're
think
here
so.
To work.
Yeah, and look, my job is to delude myself so I can delude myself into not being, intimidated for a little bit. And then,
But you're sitting there next to Michael Caine.
Yeah.
And he's just, it's like effortless with that guy.
It truly is.
Really?
I mean, I think the first take, if he got the words right, you've got it.
Really?
It is effortless, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch. And it's certainly something to aspire to. Yeah.
What was it? You did most of your scenes with him in that movie.
Yeah.
I just watched that movie by coincidence. I didn't know about it. And now I want to see the other work of that director, because there seems to be a trend in films right now that there are these, I guess they're indie movies, but they're really sort of insensibility art movies. I think that Swiss Army Man is an art movie, really. I mean, it's very entertaining and it's compelling.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I think, for me, that film has the potential to really have both, almost the way that
that's
maybe
what I mean. Same with Youth, too, I thought, in The Lobster that I saw.
Yeah, sort of out there, like, pop song or a B-side pop song. I think it can be for an audience, but I think there's a lot more to it. I think there's a lot at work, and I think that's exciting.
Well, I don't mean art film in the way that it's going to distance people,
right.
Or be too bizarre or cryptic for people to understand. I mean, it's driven by a lot of gas.
Yeah.
Because I never really thought about it that way until I told my producer, he asked me if I saw the farting movie.
Yeah.
Are you getting a lot of that?
I am, and I'm all for that. In fact, I love telling people that, like, this is my fart film. Like, it's like something you're supposed to check off, like a box,
Oh,
I did my sci-fi film, my Western, or this is my fart film,
I don't know that anyone's ever said that before.
Yeah.
I think you might be the only one that's able to say that this is my fart film.
I love it. I don't know what it says about me, but I was so excited by the sense of humor in the film, and it's like it's like some secret part of ourselves that we don't always get to, let come out to play, or that you're just like with your friends, but not out in the world. And
sure.
So something actually kind of private and vulnerable about it too.
Not farting?
Well, yeah, sure.
No, I know. I agree with you. Because there's this idea that it's gratuitous to do fart jokes, but fart jokes are probably the oldest type of joke there are. Outside of hostile jokes, where people are getting laughs just for hitting other people.
Right.
I think the fart has been funny as soon as humans were able to laugh.
Yeah.
I mean,
why is that? Because it is just a bodily function, right?
I know, but it's surprising. Sometimes it happens at the wrong time. They all sound different. They stink.
Yeah.
They're, I think, fundamentally embarrassing. I mean, there is a certain amount of pride in them.
Yeah.
Either for length tone, or the power of the smell. But that's in small circles. You know, that's not for everybody.
Yeah. But it almost is in private circles. I mean, maybe embarrassing? Not. Am I wrong about that?
About what?
That they're sort of exciting?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, if you have that type of intimacy with somebody, that's certainly a testament to intimacy. Like when you're in a relationship, when you cross the fart barrier.
Well, yeah, totally.
It's a very important day. And once you do it once, you're like, this is the way it's going
to
be now.
That's right. Because we need to be ourselves.
Well, I think that there's a real scene in that movie, because your character is so awkward and insecure and sort of self-loathing to a degree.
Yeah.
You know, that moment of freedom. Yeah, I don't want to spoil it. It'd be hard to spoil it, but you know, you own it.
Well, look, dude. So you got it. Like, but that's amazing. Okay, so first of all, so this film. One thing the director said to me when I met them was, and this has to do with the history of the fart joke. And
yeah,
is, you know, we want to make a film where the first fart makes you laugh and the last fart makes you cry.
Mm-hmm. And that was a discussion?
I was in. That's all I needed to hear.
That was the pitch?
Yeah. Dude, come on. If we could do that,
if we could, that
would be a miracle.
It's like space travel.
I mean, come on. I was so into that idea.
Yeah.
I thought, this is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
If we could do that, can you imagine? And then
I was proud of you.
Well, thanks. But also, if the film is what you're saying about my character maybe being self-loathing, is great that you picked up on that, because I do think he is somebody who his own shame has prevented him from either loving or receiving love, you know, in his life, and from loving himself. And, you know, I think it's hard to exist in the world. And when you feel that way, you continue to isolate yourself, usually, you know.
Because you feel uncomfortable in your own skin, and you're constantly projecting what other people are thinking about you. But it's really just you.
Yeah.
And so it's like it's a very, you're almost invisible.
And it's invisible and lonely.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what this guy is. And then, you know, through this farting dead body.
Yeah,
you know, he does learn to have fun again, or be happy again, or to have just some kind of connection where he actually feels seen or heard or loved, mm-hmm. Or receives it, or is able to give it. And yeah, the fart is not just a cheap joke, but it is, I think, in the end, a way to declare some kind of love.
Or freedom, or something, some sort of self-ownership in a weird way.
This is me.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, it was quite a journey for that character to.
yeah.
And like, you know, I don't know, when you look at a script like that, I guess, what's the name of the writer director? Daniel?
The Daniels.
The Daniels.
Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert. Two different guys.
Okay. Yeah. Where do they come from?
I believe one's from Alabama, one's from, I want to say, Massachusetts.
Is there a second movie?
They met in college. No, that's their first film.
First film.
They've made videos and shorts, music videos and short films, which are excellent.
So these are, but guys who, like, they're young.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, to take this premise, when you look at that script, do you ask yourself, what is the reality of this movie? I mean, because it's one of those movies where you're like, Where is this landscape? Is this a real thing? Is it like, because at the end, you sort of have to ask yourself, how much was, you know, maybe a hallucination?
Right. And frankly, you know, I'm happy to let somebody have their own feelings about that.
Right.
You know, I actually don't think it's probably like the most important thing, whether it's real or not.
But
as you play it, when you
look at the script, do you go like, okay, so this landscape... It does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Totally. I know what you're saying. I think totally real for me.
Right.
As an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be much more challenging material than I expected. The part of me wanting to do this film was my own like desire to like go have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Daniels have such creative joy and spirit in their work. If you see their music videos too, but just seeing the film. They have a real spirit, and that's something literally the first time I saw their work, I thought to myself, whatever juice those guys are drinking, like, I want some,
sure.
You know? And that's literally what, you know, I wanted that. I mean, talking about, especially like we were just talking about a film like Prisoners, right? And like, you know, that like I in my life was craving literally like, I want to go fuck around. You know,
oh, like, you lighten up a little bit.
Yeah,
have some
fun. Or just, you know, that part, like another part of me, the part of me that, that thinks that, you know, a farting human jet ski is like fucking brilliant and hilarious, you know, which people may not know that I would like, just like think that that's the greatest thing in the world. Right. So, so I look at it completely real and I was really excited, but once you get into that, it's actually a really hard thing to be totally convicted about. I mean, meaning like, wow, okay. Like, some of this dialogue is really challenging, actually, like to explain to a essentially like a child, but a dead guy who's forgotten everything, like what's sex, what's a boner, what's
life, and Daniel what's Radcliffe love. was great. Like, I mean, great. That was a tough one,
really tough. Yeah, no, seriously. Yeah, it's a really hard part, and he killed it. Yeah,
yeah, and but he seems like, not unlike you, a very open guy, nice guy. I've had him in here, like, you know, also up for the challenge to transcend the Potter.
Yeah, he's a total sweetie and a. Like, he'll do anything. Like, he's balls to the wall once he's in on something. You know, it's great. And we needed that.
Well, it came out well. I mean, I watched it. Well, because look, you know, there's some movies, like in the last two movies I've seen you in, the last three movies I've seen you in, you know, were very interesting movies. But Youth and this one, you know, those were, you know, they're compelling movies that don't necessarily explain themselves. Obviously, this one is much funnier.
Yep.
And Youth was really an exploration of age, oddly. Mm. But the landscape was equally as surreal and a little peculiar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That character was like an actor who was kind of drying out or relaxing in between and thinking about a role. Oh, yeah. then you got to put on the Hitler outfit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
that was great.
When I, you know, was going to do that, when I accepted that part, so to speak, I was really excited by the director, the actors. The script was really kind of had its own little magic to it, the details that guy Paolo is seeing. And so I just kind of washed over the Hitler thing. I was like, okay, I'll figure that out.
Right.
Then when I went to really think about it, I was like, what the fuck am I doing? You know, I had like an existential crisis, you know.
About donning the Hitler costume?
Yeah. I felt really strange about it for a while and really conflicted. And then I realized, well, I guess this is what that guy is going through. So I just use it. You know, I spent my 30th birthday dressed as that character.
Say his name.
I was in Switzerland. No, I can't even see. You know, it's weird. Literally, June 19th of 2 years ago. I spent
the day dressed as Hitler.
And that, I don't think that helped the sort of, existential feeling going into your 30s. No.
When you ask yourself, where am I at this point in my life? And you look down, I'm dressed as Hitler sitting at a table.
Yeah.
That was good. That's a good story.
Yeah, it was good.
But what is your process when you're sitting there watching these veterans?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I really get off on being around people who like, you know, I don't know. It's just great. So whether that's a director or an actor, and you definitely see things to be inspired by or go, you know, right. Like, man, I could probably just like take a breath right here, like Michael Caine, and just, you know, really not, you know, right. I mean, it's going to come. Or, you know, you could see another actor do something and go, you know what, I should try that. And then the trick is, though, like, it's figuring out what's best for you. Definitely when I was a younger person, you know, you read about people, you see people, you want to be like this actor, you want to be like that. You know, luckily, you know, that doesn't really cross, you know, one's mind anymore. You sort of learn you have to
do how you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well, I find that when I talk to actors, the ones that talk, that it is hard to explain, and it is sort of an evolving craft. Now, however you put it in place, whenever you nail it, whenever you start to really feel your own abilities, that it does seem that the evolution of it is really up to you. That, you know, it's not a trick or anything else, but you're going to figure out ways to go deeper in a scene or in a moment, and you're going to surprise yourself. And, you know, you might get some sort of emotional muscle memory from that.
Yeah.
By, you know, I imagine that sitting, you know, at a table dressed as Hitler on your 30th birthday did find some new territory within your heart and mind of things you can do and are willing to do, and even the feeling of that.
Totally. And you know what? That was a super surprising day of work, actually, because there was the last thing I wanted to do on my 30th birthday was spend 3 hours of makeup, of prosthetics, right?
Right.
Sticky shit getting put on your face,
right,
having to hold still
right
at 5 a.m. And uh-huh, like, you know, but then you sort of go, okay, you know what? This is great. And I'm just going to give myself over this thing. And you go, fuck it. And then, like, the scene actually went great, and some things happened that I didn't know were going to happen. You know.
Because of you?
Well, I think just because I had to, like, get out of my own head.
Right.
I just had to go, fuck it.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe I wouldn't have been in that place. I needed to say fuck it if it wasn't my 30th birthday.
Right.
And then I had a great time doing the scene. So I surprised myself that it was so fun.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing still to say.
Well, you were, but yeah, I mean, not really, because it was, you were studying for a role within the movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't like you were, you know, being Hitler.
Yeah.
Did they bring a cake to the set?
Yeah, we had cake and champagne.
Were you still wearing the Hitler outfit when you had the cake?
I think I'd gotten it off. I hope so. Let's see. Yeah. That would have been good, though. That would have been good. Yeah.
But you've been doing this a long time. I mean, how long is it? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Manhattan and then Connecticut.
You were in Manhattan as a young kid.
Mm-hmm.
So you lived in a nice apartment in Manhattan. Your dad, what'd your dad do?
Dad was like kind of a financial advisor. Yeah, we were in a one bedroom. There was four, my mom, dad, me, and my sister. So eventually we moved to the suburbs.
Sure.
Right? Because, you
what
know,
part of town were you growing up in?
We were near like 61st and Lex.
Uh-huh. And you were there for how long?
I was there till like fourth grade.
And then you moved to Connecticut so your dad could work in the city.
Yeah, like commuter train town,
sure,
right? Everybody takes the train in, you know, good public schools. So you have to pay, you know,
sure,
so it was easier to
town?
Afford to live. It was called Wilton.
I know Wilton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's like a theater community, or that's Westport, really, right?
Well, yeah, but, you know, there is a little, well, yeah. Yeah, Wilton, Westport, you know, it's right there.
Because all the stage actors live around.
I guess there are a bunch. Yeah, that's right. You're right.
Yeah. So they always had pretty good little theater situations in those Connecticut towns.
Yeah, I guess that, you know, doing community theater is you know,
in Connecticut, right? Good.
Where I started.
Is it?
Yeah, kind of really at this theater in New Canaan,
mm-hmm,
which I believe was called the Powerhouse Theater. Mm-hmm. But honest, I mean, like little, you know, this was like community. Yeah, I mean.
How old were you?
Whenever I moved there, I started doing it. I think it was one of those things where you move towns, and I believe my mom just had me do like every extracurricular activity there was.
To integrate you into the
every sport,
town?
Every
Yeah.
Which, you know, and just like the theater was one of them. So like, you know,
what sports?
Basketball is my favorite sport. I still play a little bit. You know, I played soccer. You know, I played most sports. Played soccer. I played hockey even
any
a little
of
bit
them
when
stick?
I was young. Just basketball is the one I still. I don't like going to the gym, but I love like playing a sport.
Mm-hmm.
I love sports. So
yeah.
I love watching sports.
Really?
Yeah, love it. Love it.
That's good.
Yeah.
I never got that.
Oh man, I just like I'm super into it. I just people they're like the people who are the best at what they do in the world, and I think they're artists, you know, honestly.
Sure.
They're
Well, you know who made me appreciate it more was that guy Chuck Klosterman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was talking about how you know it's in his new book, but there was a bit on football in there. He says that it's really the only thing you can watch, especially on television, where you honestly don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because it's all relative to these humans doing this amazing thing that doesn't have a script.
Totally. And I feel that it is drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is. And I'm into that. I love the stats of it. I love the details.
Yeah.
Yeah, the strategy.
You're in.
And that's what, you know, a lot of times I do, you know, seven people ask, what's your favorite thing on TV? And you know,
that's pretty much
the only thing. I mean, I watch a lot of movies. You know, I watch a lot of movies, but a lot of old movies. But if I'm going to watch TV, it's usually sports.
And you play music too?
Yeah, I used to play a bunch. You know, I still
instrument, guitar.
Yeah, I play guitar a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I used to play a lot. But yeah, I like to travel with a little, you know, beater guitar
just
to like have. And when you're in a hotel room for weeks, you know, away from everything. I have a friend now who has a studio to like jam in, or like a little rehearsal space.
Uh-huh.
And I think it would be fun to go plug in and see what that feels like again.
But open it up.
Yeah, baby. No, I mean, you know, it would be fun. I miss, I do miss that. In fact, that is something that I get off on, where you get from certain films like A Swiss Army Man, where you're really like collaborating and playing with people.
Yeah.
You know, and that has that feeling that, you know, that there's really a special feeling when you, I mean, I see your instruments here. When you play with people,
I know,
and it clicks for a moment, it's fucking
great.
You know,
I got to do it more.
It's really a special feeling. So I do miss that, and sometimes I get that through my work.
Well, I imagine with the in the new movie, especially, that you must get it.
Yeah,
I mean, I know you. It's scene for scene, and some days are tedious, and sometimes there's a lot of takes. But it seems to me that, you know, in the ensembles that you've been in, certainly in the movies I've seen, you're working with, you know, pretty amazing actors, and a lot of times it's pretty kind of one-on-one type of shit.
Totally, and I, exactly, and I dig that, and I think that's why I keep saying, like, but the people, you know, it's almost like that band feeling, even with the director, like,
you know
when you meet with people or you see their work, like, oh, we have something in common, you know, like, let's, you know, get into it.
So when did you start doing it seriously?
Well, I started doing plays in New York, off-Broadway and Broadway, even in late middle school, early high school. So, you know, I started technically very young, and I did my LIE, I was 16.
Sure.
You know.
But you'd already done theater.
I'd done theater, but, you know,
Like what?
I did a play called Inherit the Wind with George C. Scott and Charles Durning. And
those guys.
People. Yeah.
Oh, man,
yeah.
Those guys were like mountains.
Yeah.
Acting mountains. That must have been a lot of spit and yelling.
You know, well, there was definitely a lot of spit and yelling, but I wish I remembered it better. You know, for me, I think it was kind of like, oh, cool. You know,
you don't remember George C. Scott, like, who's this kid?
Well, I do actually, but still, I didn't have the romance I would have about it now.
Yeah. What do you remember about George C. Scott? I think they've both passed now, haven't they?
Yeah. His health wasn't great at
the
time, actually.
Yeah.
So sadly, I do remember him struggling a little bit, but he was a bear of an actor. I mean, really, presence and gravitas for days, you know. And my big scene was with him on like a witness stand, sort of getting interrogated by those two. But I don't think until I was 18 and went to my freshman year in college, which I kind of just forced myself to go to make sure I tried it, did I say, okay, you know what, I'm gonna be an actor. And I remember being in my dorm room and was probably like, you know, sick of something I was doing. It was like, fuck this, I'm going to be an actor.
Yeah. Did you do any training?
I've actually started to more over the past like 5 years, I would say.
No kidding.
I think because I started acting young, I had a lot of feelings about it, meaning I saw the world, I saw how other kids acted my age or a little older than me, and I was actually really turned off by that. So I think I made a great effort when I really started to act to not, in fact, I used college, frankly, I kept going back to college for a few years just to like check myself on the acting stuff.
Sure.
I really had an aversion at first to the way, you know, sort of like, it just seemed like how many people kept doing it for the rest of their lives, right?
Or
became the kind of actor I hope to one day
become.
You
had a fear probably of being pigeonholed as a child who could do it.
Yeah.
As a young actor.
Yeah, or, you know.
Right.
And it was actually a big, I was out here, I was doing a movie called The Girl Next Door, which was kind of a teen comedy, one of my early jobs.
Yeah.
And I was really fearful doing it because in it I looked a lot like myself, like a dorky haircut and glasses.
Yeah.
And I was like, I felt like I could do more as an actor possibly, or that's what I wanted. And I thought, fuck, this is all I'm ever going to get to play.
Right.
You know, because these teen movies were doing very well then. And I was really scared. And I didn't know you could say no yet. You know, that's kind of something you have to learn, I think.
I had a similar conversation with Martin Starr.
Yeah.
The guy who, you know, from Freaks and Geeks. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
Like he, you know, hit a wall with that, you know, with sort of like, I want to act and I don't want to be, you know, here's the nerd. We need a nerd.
Right.
You know.
God, Freaks and Geeks is so good, though.
Oh, yeah. He was great.
I love it.
He's great in this new one. He's really kind of a very thoughtful, interesting actor in Silicon Valley as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But while I was doing The Girl Next Door, I got a part in a movie called The Ballad of Jack and Rose that Rebecca Miller was writing and directing, and that Daniel Day-Lewis and Catherine Keener were starring in. And I got to play somebody who was felt very different from me or another side of me. And it was actually like getting that part, I felt like, okay, somebody saw me something at, like, okay, I can, I can be an actor. Like, you know, I can do this.
Yeah. And then you started to, like, I don't think anyone, you realize that there was a business to commercial films that dealt with young people. And there was a very small set of archetypes that were repeated.
Yeah.
So once you were able to sort of enter the world of independent film where there was more depth and more range and it wasn't hinging on stereotypes, you kind of found your emotional voice in a little more range.
I think so. And I think as a young person, like if you're not challenged, how are you going to grow, right, and become better at what you do?
Right. And I don't know if that's necessarily important to people that are making a lot of money in mainstream movies, right?
Yeah. That was probably what was most important to me, though.
That's great, though. You weren't like, I'm just going to be a movie star.
Yeah. But then, you know, you do it for a while, and then, you know, there are certain ebbs and flows to how you feel about it. So I find myself poking around more and more about how to do it now than I used to.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, when did you, like, so you did The Ballad of Jack and Rose, and then, like, shortly after, or maybe a year or two, you worked on Little Miss Sunshine, which is another sort of defining role for you.
Yeah,
You know, and after LIE, that was the one.
Yeah, and that's probably, like, the first one for a lot of people, rather than LIE or what, you know.
Right, sure.
Yeah, Little Miss Sunshine.
For me, yeah, it was. And you got to work with Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
And Kinnear's pretty good too.
They're all great. I mean, Steve Carell, Toni Collette's amazing actress.
Toni Collette, that's right, Carell.
Yeah, they were great. That was a really special experience, actually, and not even because of the result, but it was actually one where when we were making it, I felt like, movies can be fun. Like, this is kind of fun, you know, like somehow something was working. It felt like it to us, you know. Mm-hmm. No clue that the movie would get seen the way it did or resonate with people the way it did. Certainly, like, Arkin, I got to sit in the back of that van with him for, a good amount of time and got to ask him questions. And,
what did
you
have to say?
You know, I can't remember. There were so many great quotes. But I will say that people would always ask about Steve Carell back then. The funniest guy on set. And actually, no, Alan. Yeah. Alan was, like, just dry fucking funny, you know.
And a great actor.
Yeah, totally. And then people and those directors I became really close with, we then later did a film with them called Ruby Sparks and, you know, friendships and it was really special. And then the fact that, you know, it seemed to really like mean something to people was nice.
And also it was like you were able to play, you know, instead of like what would be like a nerd character, it was sort of like a kind of like existentially.
Yeah.
Kind of challenged outsider character.
Yeah.
Which I think you do a bit.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I felt like he had a little punk rock in him too, just in the way of like, you know, taking a vow of silence and being like, you know, that's you got to have a little bit of balls actually to do that. You know, that's a little bit of a fuck you.
Fuck you, yeah.
I liked that character a lot and I really felt like I knew that guy. Like, you know, I mean, you know, friends like who, you know, I had a friend who read Nietzsche and listened to Otis Smith and was really fucking quiet.
But stewing?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, an inner rage, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And that was, and, you know, I have to say that was also, that was actually kind of a scary part because I don't talk in most of the film and I had no clue if I, you know, I wasn't experienced enough to sort of say, I trust in myself or I trust in my directors and I trust in, you know, I was like, fuck,
am I getting across?
I hope somebody feels my guy, you know, because I'm not able to say anything.
Right.
And I liked that a lot, you know, and I would love to do I'd love to do a silent film or something, you know, or part who, you know, I love that type of expression, and think it's very cinematic. But it was really nice when it was like, oh, like, yeah, people got Dwayne, you know, it did, it felt,
they
you
did
know,
get it, it yeah,
got, it felt good. Yeah,
and you had to trust that script and the directors that, you know, there was a balance to the characters, the comedy of it all.
Yeah.
And there was a real family, that was this kind of interesting element of that, is that how the family structure really was close, you know, despite the kind of varied characters, you know, that there was a real kind of love and unity to everything.
Well, and I think there's a lot of truth to that, though.
Sure.
Right?
Oh,
I
mean, yeah. No, no, yeah.
That's why I think it kind of worked for people.
Yeah, it was stunning. And when did you start? So you say you started studying, actually, you know, like, you obviously you're going on a lot of natural ability. So when you decided to study acting, how did you decide to go about it?
Well, yeah, I should clarify. I mean, you know, I definitely used to, like, first of all, growing up in the theater, sure. I think was a natural,
yeah.
In retrospect, I learned a lot, mm-hmm. you know, didn't know I even was at the time, but,
right.
but did. And then certainly had a, you know, enough of a hunger when I was younger to read everything about it, mm-hmm. and sort of watch a lot of films and stuff. But then, you know, I think it's really fun to keep figuring out how to sort of like walk towards a character. And so usually I try to find something new to do for each character.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that can mean trying some new thing that I've heard about. Like I've heard that, right, people do animal work for acting,
sure.
right? Okay, I'd never done that before. So there was a certain character where I thought, you know, I'm going to go try that for this character.
On your own.
It feels... Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, yeah, no, I went and worked with somebody
oh.
as well.
Oh, okay.
You know, but sought out somebody who teaches that.
Animal
and
work.
You say, yeah, I think this might be good for this character. That seems to make sense in my head.
Which
for some
character
reason.
Was it?
I'm hesitant to, like, talk about.
Why is it?
No, I guess it's just, you know, the first time I did that, I think, was for 12 Years a Slave.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember how many years ago that was. But, you know, there was just something in it where I felt... So anyway, like, it's fun to maybe find something new to try for uh-huh. a part. And
sure.
it doesn't always... Sometimes the benefit you reap is very clear immediately. Like, okay, I know why I tried.
Yeah.
You know, this, you know, mask work, you know,
sure.
for this part. And sometimes it's not, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad I tried that because I've heard people study that in school, you
right.
know, so I'm glad I tried it and know if it...
Have you had success with animal work?
Yes, I have.
And yeah. have you had success with mask work?
I think maybe that one resonated a little bit less
uh-huh.
for me. I feel like I actually was already a little bit kind of in tune with that, weirdly.
Uh-huh. What is exactly?
Okay, well, mask work, it is really fascinating, though. You could, let's say I'd put a mask on you.
Yeah.
You don't know what the mask is.
Uh-huh.
And you're basically probably going to intuit something somehow.
Yeah.
And behave based on what your sort of intuition is telling you.
From reaction of you?
No,
or
no,
just from the feeling?
From your feeling of the mask.
Without knowing almost. What the mask
is. Yeah. And it'll often line up with what the mask is. And then you'll do it where you know what the mask is and you'll say, okay, this kind of exaggerated frown, how does this impact my body?
And they're basic know? Masks.
Basic.
Well, I mean, like they're not like superheroes or
no,
Mexican
no. They're
wrestling
like more
masks.
Old school, like, yeah, like more Greek feeling.
Sure, right. I get right. So yeah. they're like, I mean, they're devoid of like a caricature.
No, yes, you're not going to recognize it,
right,
and go,
right.
"Oh, Superman, I know what that feels like."
Right.
No,
or
no,
they're not exaggerated.
It's more primal.
Right. Huh. So you have the intuition and then you reveal the mask to yourself. And then maybe you do it knowing the mask.
Yes, yeah, so that's a couple ways, and there's more, but the way that relates for me already is I really like the idea of like, right, okay, how does the clothes make you feel different? Shoes make me feel really different. Hair color makes me, hair's darker than normal right now, makes me feel really different. You know, center of energy, like, okay, I carry a lot of tension in my shoulders,
yeah.
you know, where people have different ways of like, you know, holding stuff in their bodies. So,
sure.
you know, some characters have more strength in their like chest and some characters have more strength in their dick, you know?
Yeah.
And like, so I feel like that kind of stuff is like mask work in a way where, you know, you're
so you kind of think about that in preparation.
Yeah, you might
how you
try
sent
that
to yourself.
Maybe you might try that on and say, okay, what's it like if I feel like, you know, a little bit more, you know, something
dick
there.
Energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Huh. And that's how that's part of your process. No, I'm not. I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
No, because like it's good to talk about this stuff. I don't know if you feel like it sounds silly or that it's embarrassing to talk about, but I think a lot of people, like I've talked to many actors, and some of them will talk about it, and some of them, you know, don't necessarily talk about it, but more lately, you know, I kind of push to talk about it because it, you know, when somebody sees your work and they're like, that guy's got something, he's a great actor. I don't even know. It doesn't matter whether they understand your explanation, but right. but your process is interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, it's true. I actually prefer not to talk about it usually just because I do feel like it's just more important. Like hopefully I'm not saying mine does, but hopefully the work speaks for itself and you just get the character and that's really
all you need,
you know?
Right. Right. But there are some people that like, you know, they're actors out there. And they're just sort of like, what's the trick? And maybe someone is listening to this and they're like, okay, masks.
And that's like, that is like almost like so the opposite of what I want too. It's like, you know, honestly, I now get like why like all adults are like, I wish I could go back to college. Uh-huh. You know, I've always heard that and now I feel that too. Yeah. But I'd be like ready to learn now because I know that, I know that I can take what hits me and leave other shit behind.
Right, but are you ready to study and do the stuff that doesn't interest you? No. I mean, there's still a lot about college. Like.
No. I just mean, like, I think, you know, it's really easy to, you know,
right.
hear something like that and be like, okay, you know, like, right, that guitar player did this, so I have to. And like, what if that's not what's like best for you?
Well, no, but you could try it. You know, I mean, it's like when you say, but I mean, the caveat is that sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that you're curious about, that interest you, that could expand your particular, you know, craft or your skill set. And, you know, you try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've talked to Paul Thomas Anderson too.
Yeah.
Like, it was weird because I don't think anyone has, like, talked to him publicly as long as I did.
Mm.
And not that I know of. I'm sure I'm not tooting my own horn, but, I mean, I did have a pretty lengthy conversation with him. And, you know, I thought he was some sort of mysterious, brooding genius, but he's sort of a clown. He's sort of a fun guy.
Yeah. He's great.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's sort of like, you know, after I talked to him for an hour or whatever, 2 hours, I was like, how are you the guy that did those things? You know?
Totally. Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah. He's also, I mean, you know, he's not going to give you all the, even as an actor, frankly. I mean, that's actually something I love about him. I think he's all guts and balls. You know, I mean, he's obviously got probably intellect for days, you know, but he's really, I think, like a guts and balls person first.
He's got a vision.
Yeah.
And then he's going to honor it.
Yeah. But even the heart of that, you know, I think there's just a lot. And I think that's why his work is so good. You know, I mean, it's not just the technical brilliance. He's really putting everything he's got on the page there as a writer, I think.
Uh-huh. You know? And that's that part. The part of the one that becomes the preacher. There's brothers. You play brothers.
Yeah.
To me, in the movies I've seen of you, that part, the intensity of that part was a unique thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
For you in acting it to be you know an evangelical who's building a congregation, you know, and has to align himself with the industry and create this. You know, this very demonic, you know, dark alliance.
Yeah.
So when you're working with Daniel Day-Lewis, the weight of that guy.
Yeah.
You both were pretty heavy, some heavy shit. Did you feel it?
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, that was.
This is the second time you work with him then.
Yeah, it was, you know, also, man, what a lucky guy I was, you know, like I loved Paul's work. Yeah. I mean, you know, I remember seeing Boogie Nights and Magnolia and Punch Drunk Love, which is one of my favorite films. You know, and Daniel is, you know, he's really, He's a very special actor.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was very lucky and thrilled to be there. And so, you know, whether it was heavy or not, I don't think, you know, I think we did 6 day weeks in the desert in Texas, July and August. It was fucking hot in this period clothes. It was a lot of sweat and it was fucking great writing. And the crew, everybody was there to make that film, you know, together to make Paul's film. And very special.
Cinematography experience. Was amazing.
Oh, man.
Music was amazing.
Elswit, Johnny Green. I mean,
Everything kind of worked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, I just remember the, like, when we're talking about collaboration and about that feeling of like sort of being, well, obviously you're in a role, but that connection in some of those scenes. And when I say heavy, I just mean that, you know, when you're having that dialogue, you know, with those two characters, you know, the scenes that you and Daniel Day-Lewis did. I mean, when cut happens, you must be like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, you know, because I'm trying to think, you know, it's sort of like, how athletes, you know, like if you go sit on the bench too long, you have to like stretch again you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like it's better to stay warm. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, once you start a day, you know, it's not over until the day is done.
Right.
You know, so it was wild, and in retrospect, more wild than doing it probably, because you know, you're sort of there and you're throwing everything you got and you got the right scene partner in front of you, so you gotta try and, you know, bring everything you got.
Well, that was funny because I talked to Ethan Hawke about working with Denzel, you know.
Yeah.
And he treated it like he, you know, he watched a bunch of old Denzel movies. Like he said, football players watch tapes.
Yeah.
So he could figure out, you know, how he was going to hold his own.
Mm, interesting.
In scenes with a guy that will take it.
Yeah.
So, you know, he knew he had to be operating at a level.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was very sort of conscious of doing that.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. That's sure. I mean, why not? You know, that...
is that a concern you have? Like, you know, okay, all right, I'm going to be... I got all these scenes with Daniel. And, you don't think that way? How am I going to hold my own?
It's possible that you have that thought like immediately, and then if you don't snuff that out, I don't know, you're going to be in trouble. So,
right.
I think the honest answer is actually no, and I don't mean that in an egotistical or arrogant way. I just think you know, you can't.
Right.
Right. And also, I don't think...
Because it'd be an obstacle to the role in a way.
Well, yeah. And also, I just don't think that's the... That would be my favorite way to think about it.
Right.
You know, I feel like we're all human and you know, right, you know, is somebody else going to take the scene? I don't think so. You know, I mean, like the writing is there.
Well, maybe it wasn't necessarily competitive, but just sort of like maybe it was an inspiration to sort of rise.
Totally. No, you're totally right. And I think that's, you know.
Everyone does that in their own way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Daniel does, I hear he's very sort of like in it, like even when cameras are off, he's wandering around in it.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's a committed guy. Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the Brian Wilson movie. We can't go through all of the movies, but the ones that I enjoyed and I liked, which you know, a lot of them I just haven't seen. But in 12 Years a Slave, that was great because that's a... kind of a gnarly character.
Yeah. You know, that's
you got to play some of those, right?
Yeah, sure. But also, right, I mean, I felt, yeah, like I don't know that that's what you lay in bed at night dreaming or hoping for. I hope I
yeah no
get to, you know,
but it is
someday.
Like but again, like you said earlier, was there empathy that had to be engaged?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. And just to kind of have a real human being there is the hope, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, you actually coming out from a place of judgment isn't always helpful, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, something that Steve McQueen and I talked about was how, you know, people who are abused often, like, sometimes abuse their animals or things like that.
Right.
You know, and maybe that's a, you know... something that you you know, you're taking you out something with, on
right.
other people or on your something you want to take out on yourself on other people or whatever. So, so there were ways sort of into it somehow. Uh-huh. And that's kind of one where you go, okay, well, I like the story and I think it's going to be a good film and these are great people. And, you know, to contribute to this, like I need to be that, you know, right. And that was good for that one, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And the Brian Wilson film, which I watched, I think a couple times actually, I thought you were great.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah.
And I don't know why, you know, I don't have anything against John Cusack, but my one thing was like, why didn't they just let Paul do the whole, you know, we can put a little makeup on him. They're fine. But who knows why choices are made? I'm not asking you to explain it to me. But how much time did you spend with Brian?
I spent a bit of time with Brian. You know, that's probably, you know, that was a very special experience for me, that making that film.
Why so?
Well, I fell in love with Brian and with the music, you know, in a very deep way. And
not previous, but during?
Well, I was, you know, I was a fan.
Sure.
But, you know, this was like, you know, something happened, you know, I mean,
right.
obsessed, spiritual connection
yeah.
uh-huh. fan, uh-huh. you know. And I think it was really important for me in a way, like something about maybe to do with reconnecting the music, though, and bringing that to acting somehow. But, you know, I spent probably about 6 or 7 months, you know, kind of just like getting ready for that and learning to play the piano and trying to get my singing up to range. And, you know, the research was so fun, listening to all the studio sessions they had. Like amazing, amazing fun stuff. I mean, really, and in fact, what everybody can listen to, the Smile sessions and the Pet Sounds box they released, really true document of an artist at work, you know, uh-huh. really, really fascinating and beautiful. And I spent time with people who worked with Brian.
And like
I spent,
who?
Like some of the Wrecking Crew guys who are still
sure,
around,
yeah, yeah.
you know, talked to a few of them and a couple of other friends of his from the time. And the amount of love and respect, you know, they had for him, you know, it really felt special to get to know this guy and be connected to that music, especially Pet Sounds and Smile, which I really
yeah,
do think
are, the ones,
are
yeah.
you know, bigger than themselves. You
yeah.
know, that happens occasionally. Somebody writes something, it's just bigger than themselves,
right.
that book or that play
yeah.
or this album.
Right.
Those are... the, you know,
yeah.
they're that.
Even if there's just one.
Yeah, that's really special, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. So, but,
and the way that you played it too, the, you know, with the, you know, hearing it in your head and the way that it was directed, I thought was very effective.
Yeah.
You know, I thought all that stuff of the early Brian Wilson was really kind of, it conveyed it.
Great.
The struggle of that guy.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, fascinating, right? I mean, that
yeah.
music was such a gift to so many people.
I have a hard time listening to
he
it.
He struggled so much.
I can hear it in the songs, though. Like,
yeah.
you know, like some people can't.
Yeah.
Like, some people can just get distance from it.
Yeah.
But, like, I get sad.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, well, sure. Now, you know.
Before I even knew that stuff, though.
Yeah.
Like, I had a hard time with Pet Sounds, like, because some of the songs were so simple for a grown-up to be writing, but the message underneath the poetry was something so... like lonely and sad and yearning for something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What was it like to spend time with him?
It was great. You know, at first I, you know, Brian is such a sensitive, sort of open, raw
mm-hmm.
spirit that, you know, my first goal was really just to like say, hey, I'm Paul. You
yeah.
know, like, you know, I'm going to play you, and I know that's probably fucking scary. Like, you know, just like
yeah.
not to like grill and study and
right.
like, you know, and frankly, he was so different then. And
sure.
I had done a lot of, I didn't meet him for months. You know, I did a few months of research before meeting him just to get my own impression of the 60s Brian versus
uh-huh.
who he is
uh-huh.
now. So I didn't feel the need at first to sort of, overstep my bounds. If in fact I wanted the opposite, I wanted him to know that I'm here for him, you
uh-huh.
know? And that so it was and I was such a fan by that point. I was, you know, excited.
Uh-huh.
Boy, you know, Brian, he can you know, he's struggled in his life, and sure. I think he can be, you know, when in front of groups of people and awkward. But when we got to talk about music, I mean, he really, like a schoolboy, came out, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he would light up and, you know, his memory and excited, and, you know, it felt very present and alive in him. And that was really exciting to see. And uh-huh. So exactly what music was for him. And, you know, it got to the point where those songs took on new meanings for me, which I don't, I'm not saying they were meanings that should be there, but, like, you know, God only knows what I'd be without you. Like, for me, I think became about music,
uh-huh. you know, right. Yeah, sure.
And, you know, in my room, like in my oh, room yeah. for me was the studio,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like, so like, I just, like, after spending some time with him, I just felt like how music, what is him, and he is yeah. his music. And so it was very special experience in that way, where it kept revealing itself, you know,
uh-huh.
And then, you know, I've gotten to hang out with him since, and I've gotten to, like, sing with him, at you know, play with him. And
oh, really?
It's fucking cool, yeah.
Yeah, publicly?
Yeah, a couple times. We did a couple, actually, the benefits for, like, mental health organizations,
uh-huh.
and, you know, I got to go up there and sing a song, kind of thing. And
so he was happy with your portrayal of him?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's great.
So what else is in the, on the, you've got a girlfriend, right?
I do.
And,
yeah.
And she's an actress.
She's an actress and a writer, yeah.
What's her name?
Yeah, Zoe Kazan.
Oh, right. Her grandfather is Elliot Kazan.
Yeah, yeah.
He did some good shit.
Yeah, he's all right. Yeah. Yeah, no, come on. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And is it hard to be actors? Or is it okay?
Together, you mean?
Well, no, I mean just like
in general,
in the same business.
Well, you know, she's a woman, and, you know, so we don't have any of that kind of,
right,
you know, it's
right,
not like
sure.
we're up for the same parts.
No.
Yeah. You know, I will say that it's actually nice to have somebody, we understand each other, I
uh-huh.
think, which is nice, and can
uh-huh.
be really supportive in that way. I think it's hard that we can both have to travel for work, like,
and sometimes, you know, be away for like months.
Yeah, like, yeah. I spent 6 months in Russia, Latvia, and Lithuania doing this War and Peace 6-hour miniseries. And
for what?
For BBC and the
really?
Weinstein Company. Yeah.
You're doing War and Peace? You were in Russia?
Yeah. So that was like, it was great, but that was hard. You know, like, I missed home. And
did she come out?
She came out twice. I came home twice. But,
uh-huh.
you know, for,
still, yeah.
you know, the, that's hard. So, you know, but we do well, actually. Yeah, we do all right.
Good. How was Russia?
It was interesting. I liked it. I drank a lot of vodka.
Yeah?
It tastes better there for some reason.
Supposed to.
Yeah. It was good. Interesting place.
Yeah? Were you in St. Petersburg?
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, that's another good thing about, it seems like you're seeing a lot of nice interesting places.
I mean, it's really, you know, I have to...
South Korea, Russia, Texas.
I get to... No, it's true. You occasionally have to actually remind yourself and go, you know what? You know, I'm lucky.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is, you know, people I don't think realize, and I don't talk about it to many people, but, you know, a lot of the job, your job, is waiting. And like, that may seem silly, but it is, can be a real fucking, you know, it can challenge you, right?
Yeah, sure.
Trailer mean, day.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
How
yeah.
do you do? Do you bring the guitar? You bring books?
It depends on what the scene's asking
sure.
for. You know, you got your music. You might, you know, maybe you have a guitar, a book, or, you know, who knows? It depends on the kind of film.
Sure.
Can you shoot the shit on this one or not? You know, what's the vibe?
Right.
What's the character? And blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I think, you know, luckily some of the films I get to do, like a Swiss Army Man, there's not a moment of idle time.
Right.
You know, and I like that, actually. That's
keep
fun.
Moving.
Yeah.
Well, I liked it, man. And I think it was a great movie. I think you do great work, and it was nice to talk to you.
Cool. Thanks, man.
All right. He's a good guy. I liked him. You know, he's interesting, and I guarantee you we're going to see a lot of interesting work from him. And that the new movie is wild. It's more than just a 2-hour fart joke. So, okay. So go to WTFpod.com. That's powered by Squarespace for all your WTF Pod needs. You can check out my tour dates coming up in Bloomington, Salt Lake City this weekend.
Where else am I going? New Mexico, Albuquerque for a night. I'm gonna go to Stand Up Live, which I think is now just one night, Saturday night, because I guess Phoenix isn't a Marin town. That's fine. I think we'll have enough room for all the Marin people that are there. Go to WTFpod.com/tour and find out and get some merch. Gonna add some posters soon. A guy did a nice poster in Spokane for me. What else? I can play some guitar a little, right? I want to thank IFC again. Boomer lives!